Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action.
Hi, everyone. It's Diane at Someone Gets Me. And today we have a really cool guest with us on the show. So you might want to grab your coffee or your tea and sit back and get a pen and paper. You're probably going to want to take notes, or you can re-listen to the episode. I have this amazing woman with me today who is a geek on the science of brain chemistry and all kinds of brain things. Like, she's really over the top on it, which is really fun because I love talking to her. We met on a cruise, actually, the first time. And before I met her, everybody kept saying, Cynthia this, Cynthia that, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know who this Cynthia person was. And the moment I met her and listened to her speak about her work at this conference we were on a cruise, I was like, oh my God. I kept saying, yes, yes, yes. And I felt this huge relief that somebody gets me. Because I'm always the one getting everyone else. And finally, I met somebody who would get me. So then we had lunch, and now the rest is history. We have a great time together, and I finally got her to say yes to being on the podcast. And so I'm so excited to have Cynthia Citron here from Tampa, Florida. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
This is so fun to have you here because you have such an amazing, amazing, I guess we could say, diverse interests and business. So first, I would like you to tell us a little bit about how did you get here to this neat brain science kind of place? What kind of life have you had that led you here? This is just so fascinating.
It's a very long story, so I'll give you the cliff notes. I think I was born just wondering, why do people do what they do? You know, I was born into a pretty dysfunctional family that totally didn't understand me. I spent most times running off crying into the other room, just trying to get away from everybody. And they just thought I was over emotional and too sensitive. And so I always was very curious about people and, you know, the differences and, you know, how to connect. And so as I got older, you know, when I was going off to college, I told my father that I wanted to go into psychology. And he scoffed at it and said, no way am I paying for that. That's a loser job. You'll never make any money. You'll deal with crazy people. I'm not paying for that. So I thought, okay, so now what am I going to do? And so I went and got my master's in marketing. And I figured at least there was a little bit of why people do what they do in marketing, but it was a far shoot from, you know, how deep I really wanted to go. So then I went and got my MBA, and I went into corporate marketing. And absolutely hated it, of course, because there's no deep connection and it was too superficial. So then life happened, about 10 years of crises after crises. And my husband at the time's ex-wife died and all of his children moved in with us. And I was just put to the test spiritually and otherwise. I was only 28. And for that next 10 years, I realized what my gift is, which is connecting with people, inspiring them, helping people get along with each other, helping people to see, you know, that core self and value themselves. And then I went back to my original knowing, and I said, well, I have to go back into this field of mental health. That's what I always knew I wanted to do. So after all of those, I was very confident that I could do this work. I had a lot of experience in my personal life, and personally grew, you know, exponentially during those years, and then went back and got my master's to go into mental health. Then I knew I didn't want to just be, you know, a regular counselor. I wanted to do something more cutting edge and more modern. And I sent it out to the universe, like, I don't know what I want to do, but I'm open and looking. You know, my antenna was open. So this man comes into the classroom talking about the brain and the love in the brain and all of this. And that was it. When he walked in the room, I said, that's it. He was doing neurofeedback therapy. And immediately I went to talk to him and proceeded to get a tour of his clinic. And then from that moment on, fell in love with the brain and how we can help people from a brain level with behaviors in their lives. So now I mix the brain and the belief system, and people pretty much transform in front of my eyes every day, all day. And I get to just be a witness to it. So it's a very long way that I got back to what I originally knew I wanted to do. But here I am doing it, you know, all day in just an inspired state. Like, I just don't get mentally tired. I get physically tired, but I leave after 10 clients just feeling so inspired and in that loving state because I get to be there all day. So I'm living my passion and purpose now.
And so that's the road of a visionary leader, though, right? That you are, is the vision never left you, even though your dad kind of said, no, 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 I won't fund it. So you found the next best way in that situation, but the vision never left. And so you had the focus and tenacity to go after the vision regardless of what was happening in your life. So that's like the hallmark of a visionary leader, which is why you're on this show right there.
Well, I was 38 when I went back. I had three little children, and it took me 4 years to do a master's program because I was trying to raise three kids at the same time. But every day I went there, I felt so in alignment with why I'm here. And I knew I was going down an incredible journey. And it really didn't feel like work to me because everything that I was learning was just so much a part of who I am. You know, and I wanted to find a way to do something different with mental health, you know, besides the drugs and the talk therapy. You know, I wanted to find something that really worked and worked quickly. You know, I didn't want to just be a therapist, you know, working say for an agency with no resources, you know, just getting frustrated, you know, because I do have that, I want to win competitive drive and I want my clients to win. So I just would never selfishly be happy like collecting the checks for years and just, you know, talking to them and chatting. You know, I wanted something that was going to change them in a deep way. I just had no idea what it looked like, but I knew there had to be some better way than the current system. That was the vision.
And that's great. And so you're unfolding that vision more and more every day since I've known you and since way before then. So if somebody came into your office or you were working with them and they were having a difficult time with that overthinking, highly intellectual brain where it does not turn off, go, 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 think, and they're living like from the neck up. Well, do you have any tips that you might want to share with some people? Maybe something that's kind of that, you know, even the beginners listening to the show all over the world can grab onto and maybe try something to help stop this overthinking brain that's just hardwired to go all the time?
Well, I've had people ask me that a lot. And unfortunately, it's much harder to do the tips and the tricks and the, you know, the mindfulness and the meditation. It's much harder to do that when you actually have a brain that is in overdrive. You know, so the first thing I would do is look at their brain maps and see, well, what are we working against biologically? Because you can do all of those things, but it isn't going to work very well if you're working against your biology. So, you know, it's like going uphill. So what I would do is get to the core problem and pretty much, you know, do some neurofeedback training and calm down those areas of the brain that are in overdrive. And then any tools, you know, like breathing or mindfulness or, you know, releasing it through journaling or even counseling, any of those methods are going to work so much better if the brain is working better.
That makes a lot of sense, getting to the core of it first. Then the next question is, if somebody doesn't have the access to you and your services and they are overthinking, would it still be a productive thing to at least give it a shot to keep trying the breathing and mindfulness and meditation? Would it eventually help the brain, even if the brain maybe is a little resistant at first?
It will. It just takes a very long time. I mean, you can rewire your brain through mindfulness. It's going to be much harder and it's going to take a very long time if you're working against your biology. But yes, it absolutely can be done. But I would also recommend that they do, you know, maybe natural supplements or something to give the brain support, you know, if they're deficient in GABA or, you know, there's something going on, to try to do something to help the brain. Otherwise, it just takes so long. And in my experience, those clients won't go the distance because it's too frustrating. Like, it's really hard to be mindful when your brain is in overdrive. You can do it, but a lot of people will quit because it's frustrating and they feel like they can't do it.
Right. You try so long and then pretty soon your ego starts saying, see, it's not working. See, it's not working. And even if you might be making some headway, there's always that rub of, I would rather have it faster. And we live in a culture that has delayed gratification problems. So add that on top of it, where we're expected to have immediately results on anything and everything, then that really builds a case for saying, okay, let's attack it from multiple levels. Practice all the mindfulness, make sure your diet and nutrition's right and exercise and breathing, and use some of these more highly technical brain support and healing systems to really help, like, kind of bring it together in a synergy. Am I on the right track?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, we always really need to address the biology before we deal with methods and techniques. You know, just for example, if you have a client or a patient that has a severe thyroid problem and you're working on depression, you know, think about how difficult that's going to be to correct the depression with, say, talk therapy or even a more body somatic therapy when chemically they're just totally a mess. You know, so if you helped that physical problem, anything you're going to do on top of that is just going to work so much better. So rather than, you know, be behind the eight ball trying to do something, you know, dealing with the biology first really makes a huge difference in the outcomes and how hard it is for people.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. So can you think of maybe somebody that you've worked with, of course, without giving any exact details, and where they started in a place and then you help them get someplace that you look at and you go, wow, that was so inspiring. I know you have tons of them, but is there somebody, a situation or kind of like a flow that kind of jumps out that you'd like to share, like an example for people to understand?
Yeah, I have one jumps out, severe anxiety. And again, he's definitely, you know, on a spiritual path and a visionary of sorts, only 22 years old, 21 years old, living at home. And when I met him, he was just staying home, so anxious, working a part-time job, but like couldn't even be out in public. His mind was always questioning whether he was doing things right or how people thought of him or did he say the right thing. I mean, his brain was so obsessive and anxious that he was just miserable and tormenting himself every single day. So what he would do is he would just, he was smoking marijuana and playing video games to kind of calm down the noise and be able to, his own form of mindfulness was playing video games to focus on the video game instead of his mind. So when he came to me, you know, the first thing I did was look at his brain maps and they were completely underpowered. So he did not have enough electrical activity to get his brain going. So his brain went swinging in the high direction of activity because it was looking for that stimulation. So he was very underpowered. So we raised up the power in his, particularly his frontal lobes and I think his temporal lobes. And we worked on the anxiety network. And he went from doing nothing, pretty much not functioning, to he came up with this idea, because once you do the neurofeedback training, your brain becomes more plastic and flexible, and you have more cognitive flexibility. So you're able to see things that are possible that you could not before. So he ended up buying a school bus and renovating it. And he's helping people on social media with, he's transgender. So he's on social media helping people to deal with that. And he's gonna transform a school bus and go all around the country just exploring and talking to people. And he found something that he is in alignment with and his purpose, but it's because his brain was better. This was almost all neurofeedback training. I didn't do a lot of counseling with him, a lot of neurofeedback training, and he's transformed right now. I mean, he's the anxiety is less, so he's working more hours, and he's just able to function and communicate with people, and he's not suffering like he used to be. Wow. And he's so inspiring now because he's so young and he's so wise, and like what he understands about the world and relationships and people, and he's just so wise for his age. And so I, you know, during the time with him, just really encouraged him to, you know, get out there and shine, because you're definitely an old soul with a ton of wisdom and you need to get out there and let the world see you instead of hiding. And he found a way to do that that's in alignment with him.
Oh, I love that. That is a great success story. And when you have those kinds of people come into your life and they have that kind of transformation, you can't help but want to keep going yourself, you know, because it's like, wow, this is like so cool.
Absolutely.
So I have another question.
Sure.
I love questions. What I'd like to hear about from you is some of your own thoughts of women in leadership. Like, you own your own business and you're very successful and you're clearly a leader. And a lot of people are saying out there, I'm hearing, you know, that women are bringing in all the new energy and really helping the world change in a lot of ways. And I'd like your thoughts on women in leadership. And is there anything that women could or should be doing differently? Or just what do you think about that whole idea?
Well, I think, you know, when we zoom out a little bit, I think one of the biggest problems, and it was for myself included, is a lot of women grow up feeling not good enough. You know, whether it's their childhood environment or, you know, once they start to compete and get out there, you know, women in the culture are, you know, it's very physical, you know, your boobs and your butt and what do you look like? And it's all the filters and the Instagram and, you know, especially the younger generations, they're not getting a message that women have a lot to contribute in the world. So a lot of the cultural messages that women get are just be hot. You know, as long as you're hot, you know, you can work with the brain thing afterwards. And that's just a really bad message to give girls and young women that, so it stops them. They're so busy competing with each other physically that they stop really trying to grow mentally and using their brains to advance, you know, because it keeps them small and competing with each other physically instead of what difference do I want to make in the world, you know? So that's a hurdle I think most women have to get past, is at some point say, excuse my French, but that's bullshit that we're here only for that, you know, and to kind of fight against what the culture tells us. And then fight against the idea that you're not good enough because, you know, you don't have this, you don't look like that, and like get in alignment with yourself. The most important thing is to heal anything in your life that has taught you that you're not good enough, because the relationship you have with yourself is primary. If you don't honor yourself and you don't respect yourself and you don't nurture yourself, then every decision you make is coming from a hole. You can't be full and you can't shine if you doubt whether you're even worth anything. You know, so I think a lot of women, especially in my practice, they really suffer with this self-worth. And the first thing we do is think about the way you talk to yourself every day. You know, some of the women I work with are just so mean and cruel to themselves every day. And then they wonder why, you know, they don't feel well. So we help cultivate a relationship to self. And most people in this culture are running out on themselves. You know, this culture is extremely distracting and there's a million things you can run away into, whether it's men or social media or, you know, anything, drinking. You can run away from yourself in a million different ways. And I think a lot of women forget to come back home and just get real with who they are and learn to love that person. Because once you get in alignment with yourself, then you can see your vision. And then you can put it into practice and you can see why you're really here. And it defies everything you ever were taught. But until you're in that zone, it's foreign to you. It seems like you're never going to figure it out. You know, so being in alignment with yourself and then being in alignment with God or your higher power or source, you know, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Once you have a vertical connection where you're in alignment with yourself and alignment with God, then everything in the world becomes so much easier and there's this clarity that you can't have when you're lost in believing the messages of the world.
So do you ever see people have difficulty with kind of coming to grips to the fact that they're 30, 40, 50 years old, however old they are, and that they were taught a bunch of lies? Like, you know, it's kind of like I've that betrayal of the culture taught me these lies about who I am. There's all of the deception. And when they finally wake up to the fact that there's something really beautiful and wonderful about them instead of something that's inadequate or not good enough or worse, really bad. Do you ever see people have to deal with that kind of betrayal of the ego and like, I don't want to believe that I'm good because this is all I know or something like that?
They do have resistance, but I do something called EMDR, which really requires people to close their eyes and go deep within themselves. So some of those defense mechanisms of, you know, fear and not changing kind of fall away. You know, so to give you an example, you know, this is a very common woman that I'll see in my practice. something happens in her earlier years. Either she has a really critical parent or an alcoholic parent or an absent parent. And so she always feels like she's not lovable or she has to work hard to get love. And so she comes from a starving place, right? So this child grows up believing either I have to work hard to get love or I'm not good enough. And then the choices follow. So they'll pick the wrong partner. They won't go for the job they deserve. They won't go for things because they are playing small, right? So then typically they'll pick the wrong husband, maybe a narcissist or someone who hurts them and proves that they're not good enough. And they'll go through a series of these types of relationships and then they come to me. And what we do is we unravel all the dots that connected. If you connect them all back, it all goes back to that original childhood belief that I'm not lovable or I have to work hard. And so when we unravel it and go back to that little girl who decided this, you know, this grown woman is living from a five-year-old belief that a five-year-old decided when the brain wasn't even developed. This kid made a decision and the 40-year-old's living from a five-year-old decision. Once my clients see that they're actually living from a five-year-old decision that isn't even true, and that their value is not based on the behaviors and opinions of anyone that was ever around them, and everybody knows that intellectually, then the whole system collapses like dominoes, and they're able to see that the dots, you know, and then they knock the dominoes down one by one, and then they're able to kind of pack up their past and see that now I'm going to operate on the truth, which is that I was always good enough. I just believed lies of the people around me that were, you know, showing me that I wasn't. And then they start to see how silly that is. That anyone else can determine your value is ridiculous. But unless you really examine it and where it comes from in your life, we believe this. Like if other people treat us badly, well, we must be bad. But that makes no logical sense.
No, and yet to a young child, because like you said, their brain's not developed and they have no other reference point, so it must be them. And then right. They keep carrying it and carrying it. And like you say, when we become adults, it's kind of that wake-up call of, well, hold on a second here, I'm not five.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've had clients, you know, cry and, you know, be so sad about the loss of all of those years. You know, when it collapses, it can be extremely depressing. You know, like, I can't believe that I didn't get this sooner, you know, and there can be a period of a little bit of a depression because of the loss of time and how much pain and suffering happened. But, you know, I've never met someone that just doesn't rise from the ashes after that and say, oh my God, like, what can I create now from this place? Now my adult brain is making true decisions and the past is packed up and put away. Like, what's possible for me now? And like everything shifts at that point, you know, and they're able to see their own vision. And many of them become leaders for either their own children or people around them as they see a vision for themselves.
And they become better parents and teach the children, hopefully, to not have those same kind of beliefs carrying forward, which then either halts or at least mitigates that intergenerational transmission of pain. Once the adult has the awareness, then the children also reap the benefit, which I think is a neat byproduct, if you will.
It is, because if they don't do that, then they pass down, you know, their own insecurities and their own, you know, anxieties, and they'll end up passing that down inadvertently.
Right. Yeah. I try to tell people about that sometimes we get some of these messages from our parents and I call it the big people around us when we're little, and they didn't do it on purpose. They didn't teach us that stuff on purpose because that's just what their belief was. And once somebody wakes up from that kind of trance, that family trance, then with all the emotions after it, when things settle, everything is better for everyone.
Yep. It's like a wave. You know, I have that client I was telling you about. His mother suffers with severe anxiety, and he's now helping her and helping her to examine herself. And so he's, you know, rippling out that healing to everybody around him now, because you can't help it. If you see the light, you know, you can't help but help those you love see the light. You can't keep it a secret.
No, it's too powerful.
Yeah.
Cool. So what kind of things do you do personally to keep your life in balance for fun and that kind of thing? What do you do for your own enjoyment?
Well, I love exercising. So, you know, I'll do weights and cardio probably about 5 times a week. I notice a huge difference in my energy and mood the days that I don't exercise. So I find exercise really keeps me centered and, you know, a lower stress. So I do that for my physical. I also take care of myself, obviously take supplements. I meal prep on Sundays and try to keep very structured meals throughout the week. So I'm eating pretty clean. Obviously try to get good sleep, you know, at least 7 hours. I do mindfulness. I have kind of incorporated as part of my everyday life. I've done a significant amount of it over the years and workshops and whatnot. So I pretty much live mindfully mostly throughout the day. Like, I'm just very aware of the movement of my chest and how much my body is involved in everything that I do. So when I feel like I'm losing that alignment with myself, I will take a time out and do a mindfulness practice, maybe like 10, 15 minutes of just sitting and focusing on the movement of my chest. So I do that. I've done A Course in Miracles, which is one of my favorite spiritual things to do, which is really all about the undoing of the ego, and that at any given time, we're either in fear or we're in love. And I just, that runs me a lot. Where am I right now? Am I in love or am I in fear? And whenever I'm in love, I just have amazing minutes. So I spend my time trying to stay in love, and it kind of transforms your days. Love and gratitude has saved me.
Oh, that's amazing. I remember I was in A Course in Miracles class years ago, and this, you know how like the one thing will stay stuck in your head forever? And the thing that still stuck in my head, and I've done a lot of other things since then, but the thing that's always in my head was the statement, I could feel love instead of this.
Yes.
And yes. That has helped me over the years with all kinds of anxiety or stress or whatever it was. When I started feeling myself ramping up or getting distracted, I go, wait, I can feel love instead of this. And I've taught that to clients over the years as kind of like its own little mantra. And, mm-hmm. you know, and it really helps just to keep our brain going in the right direction. Wherever our energy goes, you know, that's where we're headed. So I love that. When you mentioned A Course in Miracles, I remembered that. That's cool.
Yeah. And I think, you know, since I did my own healing, you know, I was one of those women that thought I didn't have any worth in my younger years from a family that didn't understand me. I always felt, you know, like there's something wrong with me. But, you know, once I realized my value is, you know, who I am is everything that gives me worth. And I found a new love for myself. It's very easy for me to just be in love, you know, when you're healed. I found it very hard to do that when I didn't have any love for myself. It was very hard to give that to others and be that loving presence for people because I was too pissed off and angry and unhappy to do that. So, you know, sometimes it's you have to go deep and heal that relationship with self before you're able to do some of these things and be in some of these states, because it works against you. You know, it's hard to give away something you don't have.
Right. So you've done a lot of personal healing yourself. You just said, what are some of the things that you use to help you?
Well, I, first of all, definitely took care of my brain. In my earlier years, I did go on an antidepressant to get my chemicals better. I definitely did extensive counseling. I did, you know, Al-Anon. I had a family member who was alcoholic, so I did a lot of Al-Anon stuff, a huge amount of healing of codependency and like really understanding how that was my biggest problem, was losing the self, because being an empath, I merged into others so easily, and I didn't realize that every time I did that, I was dishonoring myself because I would control them and put my energy on them in lieu of me. So turning around my codependency and really learning all about that was a huge difference for me. You know, so healing the depression, the codependency, and then finding connection to source and a higher power through Course in Miracles and other spiritual leaders like Eckhart Tolle. And I did a ton of spiritual work. And then the final piece for me was mindfulness, was, you know, doing the mindfulness-based stress reduction workshop, you know, which is like an 8-week program that really gets you in aligned to your center. You know, so I dealt with all of my mind stuff, but I still thought that my mind was me. So it doesn't matter if you're all healed and your past is packed up, if you still think that the thinking stuff is you. So really separating from my thinking and kind of laughing at it a lot, like, here it goes again, you know, that crazy mind of mine, and developing a connection with that that was not so hurtful was really the final step, was for me to see that I'm down here in my heart area, and that brain just spits out all of that stuff all day till I die, and I can tune in when I want to and tune out when I don't. That was like the final healing, which really makes me where I am today, just kind of living in bliss most of the time. You know, I get knocked off like anybody else, but it takes a lot to knock me off my center now.
Oh, that's great. You know, you bring up so many good points, and I'm glad you answered the question the way you did, because a lot of people that have sent me emails about the show and talked to me in with my own career is like, they have this perception that you and I and people who do these kinds of interesting work we do, like all these visionaries I've interviewed, we just landed here. That there wasn't really a road. And I'm like, no, we're here because of decades of diligent work on multiple levels, you know, spiritual and emotional and intellectual ourselves. And that's how it is that we're stepping into the vision to actually help, like, lead and show people the way, because we didn't land here.
Yeah. Well, I remember even as a kid looking around and going, what the hell, where am I? Like, there has to be something better than this. You know, what the people do and the behaviors and the world and the expectations and all that crap that the world throws at us. I'm like, there has to be something better than this. I can't do this for 80 years. Like, I got to find some other thing, because this isn't going to work for me. Like, I even knew that as a kid, like, I can't do this thing. Like, I have to find like another way. And damn it, if it didn't take 40 years, but, you know, I finally found the way. And the way for me is, you know, I scoff at the messages of the world. You know, the world doesn't threaten me anymore. I just look at it, you know, as the silly thing that is around me, but it just doesn't hurt me anymore. I don't, you know, I've grown to kind of be in it, but not of it, you know? And so the world is a friendly place, you know, once you finally get to that, again, I call it being anchored within yourself and then vertically connected to your higher power. And if you operate vertically instead of horizontally, the world is not as threatening and scary.
Yes, that takes a lot of the fear away when you really realize where the connection is. So you've mentioned earlier that you're an empath, and I also know that you're highly intuitive from knowing you. And how do you use those skills to help the people that you help? And also, how do you use them in your own life for your own welfare?
Well, the intuitiveness, it's funny because I've had this conversation with people that, you know, empaths, when they're younger, you know, people are surprised sometimes that I'm an empath, because I present strong and maybe even a little harder than a lot of people, because I'm from New York and I just kind of say it like it is. And, you know, I'm not like a wispy kind of person, you know. And I explain to them, because I meet a lot of women that are super like hard and angry because of walls. You know, and I explain to them that used to be me. I said, if you met me in my younger years, you would see that I was building walls and getting hard and angry against my own sensitivity, because I didn't know what to do with this sensitive soul of mine. So I built up walls and acted like a badass. So figuring if I am a badass, then everybody will leave me alone. And then as I healed, you know, those walls came down. And I don't even really call it intuitive anymore. I feel like it's not like I'm doing anything anymore. I'm just in alignment with my real nature. And when I sit in that space and I'm fully present with people, things just happen that I'm not really feeling even responsible for. Like, I can't even tell you how I'm doing it. I could just tell you that if you get in aligned with your true nature and you operate in a very present, focused way, you're going to feel people as an empath like you've never felt them before. And then things just flow from there. Like, I don't always even know why, like, some of the work goes in these amazing places. And I don't even feel like it's me sometimes, you know? So I don't really have an answer to how do you use your intuition. I think it's just me. Like, I'm not using it. I'm just being very aligned with myself and just being me. And then everything just kind of happens from that place. That's inexplicable.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that. When I'm listening to you speak, I just see the flow like that, right? And then it's kind of like, well, the intuition's really using you, because the source is really, you're the vessel and you're the hands and feet of source, which
is what it feels like.
That's what intuition and empath is in a lot of senses for me from the spiritual perspective. So I love how you answered that question. That's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. And I just I've always had a gift and a curse of merging into people like it very quickly. And I've learned to fine tune that over the years. So, you know, if I have a client in my chair, you know, I just can merge in and almost be them and see the world through their eyes. So, and I'm not even a part of that. It almost seems like I'm not even in it. Like I'm over merging with them and trying to understand them, and my ego and my beliefs and who I am isn't even part of the process. Like it's all about them. So I think, you know, intuition is also about, you know, being able to connect energies with people and try to see what are they seeing and feeling over there, so that you can help them.
Exactly. That's amazing. I love how you describe that. So what's the most interesting food you've ever eaten?
Let me think. I want to say, and I'm not even gonna remember the name of it, but I was in Spain. And it was some type of a soup, but I think it was like bull's testicles or something. And it was disgusting. That's probably the grossest thing I've ever eaten. But then again, I've eaten escargot since I've been six. My grandfather used to give it to me. And of course, I wanted to be the cool sibling because my brother and sister wouldn't eat it. And I was like, well, I'll eat it, you know, the youngest of three. So I've always been very daring. I pretty much have eaten everything, like tripe and chicken livers and snails, and you know, there's very few things I won't try. Now, would I eat them regularly? Probably not. But I'll try anything. I love eating. I love food.
I love it. And so the name of your company is Reboot. Tell us a little bit about how you came to that name. I love that name.
Well, I was working for someone as the clinical director doing neurofeedback. And I was dreaming every day of getting out and doing it in a better way. You know, I wanted to do this work, but I didn't totally agree with the way it was being done. So I would sit and put stuff in my phone regularly. You talk about like the vision. I was creating something every day. I put a name of what I would call it and what would it look like and what would I do. And I even did a vision board of what would I want the office to look like. And I was like, really able to survive those years just knowing that something amazing is coming, and I'm just going to start putting it together and just trusting that it's going to turn into something. And I just listed tons of names, and when it came time to do it, that one just really stood out, and really as the best descriptor of what I'm doing, because you know, we're correcting the brain patterns and kind of rebooting what the brain is doing for you. And then the EMDR that I do helps people change the beliefs they have about themselves. And if you change what you believe about yourself and pretty much undo the past, you are getting rebooted to a whole nother possibility. Because, you know, for example, if you believe I'm not good enough, and we change that belief to my value is not dependent on the behaviors and opinions of others, or my value is determined by God and me, then everything that's possible for you and every perception is going to be completely different. So it is basically a reboot. So we reboot the brain and we reboot the belief system. And when you get those two things right, the world just becomes a much friendlier place.
Oh, that's great. And so Cynthia's website is rebootlivebetter.com, which I love. And so I'll make sure that that link is in the show notes so you can contact her and do all kinds of neat communication, because she's fascinating. Do you work with people online? Like, there's a lot of people listening to the show all over the world. So do you have to be in Tampa, Florida to work with you, or do you work with people virtually? How does that work?
Well, the neurofeedback piece, you have to be present in the office to do the neurofeedback training. But there's neurofeedback, you know, all over the place. So, you know, I would encourage people who want to look into neurofeedback to go to the BCIA website. They do board certifications, because you want someone who's board certified, and find a practitioner, you know, in your area that can help with the brain piece. I do Skype sessions. I do EMDR by Skype. So that's where we'll really work on putting your past away and changing how you see, you know, what's possible for you. So I do online sessions there.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I will put the link to the BCIA website in the show notes as well. So if you're not in the local Tampa area, you can look for the proper resources and get a credentialed, certified person. Definitely don't be playing around with your brain with somebody who doesn't know what they're doing.
No. And all neurofeedback is not the same either. So the software that I use is called NeuroGuide. So if you can find a NeuroGuide person, that's really the best way to go. Not all systems are the same. So you really want to be careful and shop around and make sure you're, you know, finding the right one for you.
Oh, that's great. That's good advice, because a lot of people might think that it's all the same. It's not all the same. And the practitioner is different, and there's so many different factors in all of it. So make sure that you feel good about whoever you're working with. Just don't go out there and start doing things without really focusing on what's right for you. So one last question. If you could put any message for the world on a billboard, and hypothetically everyone would see it, what would that message be?
Put all of your energy on the inside, learning your true value.
Oh, that's wonderful. Put all your energy on the inside and learn your true value. That's beautiful. I think we should put that on a billboard here in our area, actually.
Because you know, everyone I meet is so disconnected from the inside, and it causes just about every mental health problem is a disconnection to self. So if you could regain the relationship and connection to self and make best friends with yourself, it goes a long way in turning your whole life around. I mean, there isn't anything outside that's ever going to save you. I've looked for it. It's not out there. I've looked high and low and under every rock. And I didn't want to do it for myself. I was looking for something out there. So stop looking outside and just go deep within yourself, and all the answers and all the healing and all the beautiful things are in there. It's not outside.
Oh, that's great. I always tell everybody connection's the correction, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
That's absolutely true. So as we wind up the show, is there anything that you wanted to talk about or something I didn't mention that you really think would be important to share so that when we're done, you feel done with the show?
Well, I feel like you've covered it. You know, when we talk about a visionary leader, it starts with being in alignment with yourself to even know anything about your vision or your ability to be a leader. You know, if you're not connected to self, it's pretty impossible. You know, we talk about intuition. That also comes from being in alignment with self and being misunderstood. You know, if you're being misunderstood, it's probably because you're not around the right people. You know, my family are not empaths. They didn't know what to do with me. And as soon as I got around like Course in Miracles people and other like-minded spiritual people, I didn't feel misunderstood anymore. You know, if you get around people that are at your intellectual level and are interested in the spiritual path, you all of a sudden don't feel alone and different and weird anymore. You realize, oh my God, I just didn't find my tribe. You know, I think just it all comes together if you're in alignment. So working on aligning and staying anchored within yourself is really, that solves mostly everything.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a great words of wisdom to close the show. You all have been listening to Cynthia Citron from Tampa, Florida. She owns Reboot. Her website is rebootlivebetter.com. And she's an amazing, talented powerhouse. So look her up and contact her and let her know you heard her on the show, and do something for your own welfare. So thank you, Cynthia, for being on the show.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Now remember, everyone, to put your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. You're a rock star and you're here on purpose with a purpose. So go out there and make some noise. And until the next episode of Someone Gets Me, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit SomeoneGetsMe.com. Again, thanks for listening.